Audible, Inc. and Harlequin present Poison Study by Maria V. Snyder. Read by Gabra Zachman. Chapter 1. Locked in darkness that surrounded me like a coffin, I had nothing to distract me from my memories. Vivid recollections waited to ambush me whenever my mind wandered. Encompassed by the blackness, I remembered white-hot flames stabbing at my face. Though my hands had been tied to a post that dug sharply into my back, I had recoiled from the onslaught. The fire had pulled away just before blistering my skin, but my eyebrows and eyelashes had long since been singed off. "Put the flames out," a man's rough voice had ordered. I blew at the blaze through cracked lips. Dried by fire and fear, the moisture in my mouth had gone, and my teeth radiated heat as if they had been baked in an oven. "Idiot," he cursed. "Not with your mouth. Use your mind. Put the flames out with your mind." Closing my eyes, I attempted to focus my thoughts on making the inferno disappear. I was willing to do anything, no matter how irrational, to persuade the man to stop.
"Try harder."
Once again, the heat swung near my face, the bright light blinding me in spite of my closed eyelids.
"Set her hair on fire," a different voice instructed.
He sounded younger and more eager than the other man.
"That should encourage her. Here, Father, let me."
My body jerked with intense fear as I recognized the voice. I twisted to loosen the bonds that held me, as my thoughts scattered into a mindless buzzing. A droning noise had echoed from my throat and grew louder until it had pervaded the room and quenched the flames. The loud, metallic clank of the lock startled me from my nightmarish memory. A wedge of pale yellow light sliced the darkness, then traveled along the stone wall as the heavy cell door opened. Caught in the lantern's glow, my eyes were seared by the brightness. I squeezed them shut as I cowered in the corner.
"Move it, rat, or we'll get the whip."
Two dungeon guards attached a chain to the metal collar on my neck and hauled me to my feet. I stumbled forward, pain blazing around my throat. As I stood on trembling legs, the guards efficiently chained my hands behind me and manacled my feet. I averted my eyes from the flickering light as they led me down the main corridor of the dungeon. Thick, rancid air puffed in my face. My bare feet shuffled through puddles of unidentifiable muck. Ignoring the calls and moans of the other prisoners, the guards never missed a step, but my heart lurched with every word.
"Ho, ho, ho, someone's gonna swing. Snap. Crack. Then your last meal slides down your legs.
One less rat to feed."
"Take me! Take me! I want to die too."
We stopped. Through squinted eyes, I saw a staircase. In an effort to get my foot onto the first step, I tripped over the chains and fell. The guards dragged me up. The rough edges of the stone steps dug into my skin, peeling away exposed flesh on my arms and legs. After being pulled through two sets of thick metal doors, I was dumped onto the floor. Sunlight stabbed between my eyes. I shut them tight as tears spilled down my cheeks. It was the first time that I had seen daylight in seasons. "This is it," I thought, starting to panic. But the knowledge that my execution would end my miserable existence in the dungeon calmed me. Yanked to my feet again, I followed the guards blindly. My body itched from insect bites and from sleeping on dirty straw. I stunk of rat. Given only a small ration of water, I didn't waste it on baths. Once my eyes adjusted to the light, I looked around. The walls were bare, without the fabled gold sconces and elaborate tapestries I had been told once decorated the castle's main hallways. The cold stone floor was worn smooth in the middle. We were probably traveling along the hidden corridors used solely by the servants and guards. As we passed two open windows, I glanced out with a hunger that no food could satisfy. The bright emerald of the grass made my eyes ache. Trees wore cloaks of leaves. Flowers laced the footpaths and overflowed from barrels. The fresh breeze smelled like an expensive perfume, and I breathed deeply.
After the acidic smells of excrement and body odor, the taste of the air was like drinking a fine wine. Warmth caressed my skin, a soothing touch compared to the constantly damp and chilly dungeon. I guessed it was the beginning of the hot season, which meant that I had been locked in the cell for 5 seasons, 1 season shy of a full year. It seemed an excessively long time for someone scheduled for execution. Winded from the effort of marching with my feet chained, I was led into a spacious office. Maps of the territory of Ixia and the lands beyond covered the walls. Piles of books on the floor made walking a straight line difficult. Candles in various stages of use littered the room, singe marks evident on several papers that had gotten too close to the candle's flame. A large wooden table, strewn with documents and ringed by 6 chairs, occupied the center of the room. At the back of the office, a man sat at a desk. Behind him, a square window gaped open, permitting a breeze to blow through his shoulder-length hair. I shuddered, causing the chains to clatter. From the whispered conversations between prison cells, I had determined that condemned prisoners were taken to an official to confess their crimes before being hanged. Wearing black pants and a black shirt with 2 red diamonds stitched on the collar, the man at the desk wore the uniform of an advisor to the commander. His pallid face held no expression. As his sapphire blue eyes scanned me, they widened in surprise. Suddenly conscious of my appearance, I glanced down at my tattered red prison gown and dirty bare feet roughened with yellow calluses. Dirt-streaked skin showed through the rips in the thin fabric. My long black hair hung in greasy clumps. Sweat-soaked, I swayed under the weight of the chains.
A woman. The next prisoner to be executed is a woman.
His voice was icy. My body trembled on hearing the word executed aloud. The calm I'd established earlier fled me. I would have sunk sobbing to the floor if the guards weren't with me. The guards tormented anyone who showed any weakness. The man tugged at the black ringlets of his hair.
I should have taken the time to reread your dossier.
He shooed the guards away.
You're dismissed.
When they were gone, he motioned me to the chair in front of his desk. The chains clanged as I perched on the edge. He opened a folder on his desk and scanned the pages.
Yelena, today may be your lucky day, he said.
I swallowed a sarcastic reply. An important lesson I had mastered during my dungeon stay was never to talk back. I bowed my head instead, avoiding eye contact. The man was quiet for a while.
Well-behaved and respectful. You're starting to look like a good candidate.
Despite the clutter of the room, the desk was neat. In addition to my folder and some writing implements, the only other items on the desk were 2 small black statues glittering with streaks of silver, a set of panthers carved to lifelike perfection.
You've been tried and found guilty of murdering General Brazel's only son, Rayad.
He paused, stroking his temple with his fingers.
That explains why Brazel's here this week, and why he has been unusually interested in the execution schedule.
The man spoke more to himself than to me. Upon hearing Brazel's name, fear coiled in my stomach. I steadied myself with a reminder that I was soon to be out of his reach forever. The territory of Ixia's military had come to power only a generation ago, but the rule had produced strict laws called the Code of Behavior. During peacetime, most of the time, strangely enough for the military, proper conduct didn't allow the taking of a human life. If someone committed murder, the punishment was execution. Self-preservation or an accidental death were not considered acceptable excuses. Once found guilty, the murderer was sent to the commander's dungeon to await a public hanging.
I suppose you're going to protest the conviction. Say you were framed or you killed out of self-defense.
He leaned back in his chair, waiting with a weary patience.
No, sir, I whispered,
all I could manage from unused vocal cords.
I killed him.
The man in black straightened in his chair, shooting me a hard look. Then he laughed aloud.
This may work out better than I'd planned.
Yelena, I'm offering you a choice. You can either be executed, Or you can be Commander Ambrose's new food taster. His last taster died recently, and we need to fill the position. I gaped at him, my heart dancing. He had to be joking. He was probably amusing himself. Great way to get a laugh. Watch hope and joy shine on the prisoner's face, then smash it by sending the accused to the noose. I played along. A fool would refuse the job. My voice rasped louder this time. Well, it's a lifetime position. The training can be lethal. After all, how can you identify poisons in the commander's food if you don't know what they taste like? He tidied the papers in the folder. You'll get a room in the castle to sleep, but most of the day you'll be with the commander. No days off, no husband or children. Some prisoners have chosen execution instead. At least then they know exactly when they're going to die, rather than guessing if it's going to come with the next bite. He clicked his teeth together, a feral grin on his face. He was serious. My whole body shook. A chance to live. Service to the commander was better than the dungeon and infinitely better than the noose. Questions raced through my mind. I'm a convicted killer. How can they trust me? What would prevent me from killing the commander or escaping? Who tastes the commander's food now? I asked instead, afraid if I asked the other questions, he'd realize his mistake and send me to the gallows. I do, so I'm anxious to find a replacement. Also, the code of behavior states that someone whose life is forfeit must be offered the job. No longer able to sit still, I stood and paced around the room, dragging my chains with me. The maps on the walls showed strategic military positions. Book titles dealt with security and spying techniques. The condition and amount of candles suggested someone who worked late into the night. I looked back at the man in the advisor's uniform. He had to be Valak, the commander's personal security chief and leader of the vast intelligence network for the territory of Ixia. What shall I tell the executioner? Valak asked. I am not a fool. Chapter 2. Valak snapped the folder closed. He walked to the door, his stride as graceful and light as a snowcat traversing thin ice. The guards waiting in the hall snapped to attention when the door opened. Valak spoke to them, and they nodded. One guard came toward me. I stared at him. Going back to the dungeon had not been part of Valak's offer. Could I escape? I scanned the room. The guard spun me around and removed the manacles and chains that had been draped around me since I'd been arrested. Raw bands of flesh circled my bloody wrists. I touched my neck, feeling skin where there used to be metal. My fingers came away sticky with blood. I groped for the chair. Being freed of the weight of the chains caused a strange sensation to sweep over me. I felt as if I were either going to float away or pass out. I inhaled until the faintness passed. When I regained my composure, I noticed Valak now stood beside his desk pouring two drinks. An opened wooden cabinet revealed rows of odd-shaped bottles and multicolored jars stacked inside. Valak placed the bottle he was holding into the cabinet and locked the door. While we're waiting for Marge, I thought maybe you could use a drink. He handed me a tall pewter goblet filled with an amber liquid. Raising his own goblet, he made a toast. To Yelena, our newest food taster. May you last longer than your predecessor. My goblet stopped short of my lips. Relax, he said. It's a standard toast. I took a long swig. The smooth liquid burned slightly as it slid down my throat. For a moment, I thought my stomach was going to rebel. This was the first time I had taken something other than water. Then it settled. Before I could question him as to what exactly had happened to the previous food taster, Valak asked me to identify the ingredients of the drink. Taking a smaller portion, I replied, "Peaches sweetened with honey." "Good. Now take another sip. This time roll the liquid around your tongue before swallowing." I complied and was surprised to taste a faint citrus flavor. Orange? That's right. Now goggle it. Gargle, I asked. He nodded. Feeling foolish, I gargled the rest of my drink and almost spat it out. Rotten oranges! The skin around Valak's eyes crinkled as he laughed. He had a strong, angular face, as if someone had stamped it from a sheet of metal, but it softened when he smiled. Handing me his drink, he asked me to repeat the experiment. With some trepidation, I took a sip, again detecting the faint orange taste. Bracing myself for the rancid flavor, I gargled Valak's drink and was relieved that gargling only enhanced the orange essence. Better? Valak asked as he took back the empty cup. Yes. Valak sat down behind his desk, opening my folder once more. Picking up his quill, he talked to me while writing.
You just had your first lesson in food tasting. Your drink was laced with a poison called butterfly's dust. Mine wasn't. The only way to detect butterfly's dust in a liquid is to gargle it. That rotten orange flavor you tasted was the poison. I rose, my head spinning. Is it lethal? A big enough dose will kill you in 2 days. The symptoms don't arrive until the second day, but by then it's too late.
Did I have a lethal dose? I held my breath.
Of course. Anything less and you wouldn't have tasted the poison.
My stomach rebelled and I started to gag. I forced down the bile in my throat, trying hard to avoid the indignity of vomiting all over Valak's desk. Valak looked up from the stack of papers. He studied my face.
I warned you the training would be dangerous. But I would hardly give you a poison your body had to fight while you suffered from malnutrition. There is an antidote to butterfly's dust.
He showed me a small vial containing a white liquid. Collapsing back into my chair, I sighed. Valak's metal face had returned. I realized he hadn't offered the antidote to me.
In answer to the question you didn't ask but should have,
this,
Valak raised the small vial and shook it, is how we keep the commander's food taster from escaping.
I stared at him, trying to understand the implication.
Yelena, you confessed to murder. We would be fools to let you serve the commander without some guarantees. Guards watch the commander at all times, and it is doubtful you would be able to reach him with a weapon. For other forms of retaliation, we use butterfly's dust.
Valak picked up the vial of antidote and twirled it in the sunlight.
You need a daily dose of this to stay alive. The antidote keeps the poison from killing you. As long as you show up each morning in my office, I will give you the antidote. Miss one morning, and you'll be dead by the next. Commit a crime or an act of treason, and you'll be sent back to the dungeon until the poison takes you.
I would avoid that fate if I were you. The poison causes severe stomach cramps and uncontrollable vomiting. Before full comprehension of my situation could sink in, Valak's eyes slid past my shoulder. I turned to see a stout woman in a housekeeper's uniform opening the door. Valak introduced her as Marge, the person who would take care of my basic needs. Expecting me to follow her, Marge strode out the door. I glanced at the vial on Valak's desk.
Come to my office tomorrow morning. Marge will direct you.
An obvious dismissal, but I paused at the door with all the questions I should have asked poised on my lips. I swallowed them. They sank like stones to my stomach. Then I closed the door and hurried after Marge, who hadn't stopped to wait. Marge never slowed her pace. I found myself panting with the effort to keep up. Trying to remember the various corridors and turns, I soon gave up as my whole world shrank to the sight of Marge's broad back and efficient stride. Her long black skirt seemed to float above the floor. The housekeeper uniform included a black shirt and white apron that hung from the neck down to the ankle and was cinched tight around the waist. The apron had two vertical rows of small red diamond shapes connected end to end. When Marge finally stopped at the baths, I had to sit on the floor to clear my spinning head.
You stink, Marge said, disgust creasing her wide face.
She pointed to the far side of the baths in a manner that indicated she was used to being obeyed.
Wash twice, then soak. I'll bring you some uniforms.
She left the room. The overpowering desire to bathe flashed like fire on my skin. Energized, I ripped the prison robe off and raced to the washing area. Hot water poured down in a cascade when I opened the duct above my head. The commander's castle was equipped with heated water tanks located one floor above the baths, a luxury even Brazel's extravagant manor house didn't have. I stood for a long time, hoping the drumming on my head would erase all thoughts of poisons. Obediently, I washed my hair and body twice. My neck, wrists, and ankles burned from the soap, but I didn't care. I scrubbed two more times, rubbing hard at the stubborn spots of dirt on my skin, stopping only when I realized they were bruises. I felt unconnected to the body under the waterfall. The pain and humiliation of being arrested and locked away had been inflicted on this body, but my soul had long since been driven out during the last 2 years I had lived in Brazel's manor house. An image of Brazel's son suddenly flashed before me. Rayad's handsome face distorted with rage. I stepped back, reflexively jerking my hands up to block him. The image disappeared, leaving me shaking. It was an effort to dry off and wrap a towel around me. I tried to focus on finding a comb instead of the ugly memories Rayad's image called forth. Even clean, my snarled hair resisted the comb. As I searched for a pair of scissors, I spotted another person in the baths from the corner of my eye. I stared at the body. A corpse looked back at me. The green eyes were the only signs of life in the gaunt, oval face. Thin stick legs looked incapable of holding the rest of the body up. Recognition shot through me like a cold splash of fear. It was my body. I averted my eyes from the mirror, having no desire to assess the damage. Coward, I thought, returning my gaze with a purpose. Had Rayad's death released my soul from where it had fled? In my mind, I tried to reconnect my spirit to my body. Why did I think my soul would return if my body was still not mine? It belonged to Commander Ambrose to be used as a tool for filtering and testing poisons. I turned away. Pulling clumps of knotted hair out with the comb, I arranged the rest into a single long braid down my back. Not long ago, all I had hoped for was a clean prison robe before my execution, and now here I was, sinking into the commander's famous hot baths.
That's long enough, Marge barked, startling me out of a light doze. Here are your uniforms. Get dressed.
Her stiff face radiated disapproval. As I dried myself, I felt Marge's impatience. Along with some undergarments, the food taster's uniform consisted of black pants, a wide red satin belt, and a red satin shirt with a line of small black diamond shapes connected end to end down each of the sleeves. The clothes were obviously sized for a man. Malnourished and measuring only 4 inches past 5 feet, I looked like a child playing pretend with her father's clothes. I wrapped the belt 3 times around my waist and rolled up the sleeves and pant legs. Marge snorted.
Valak only told me to feed you and show you to your room. But I think we'll stop by the seamstress's first.
Pausing at the open door, Marge pursed her lips and added,
You'll need boots, too.
Obediently, I followed Marge like a lost puppy. The seamstress, Delana, laughed gaily at my appearance. Her heart-shaped face had a halo of curly blonde hair. Honey-colored eyes and long eyelashes enhanced her beauty.
The stable boys wear the same pants, and the kitchen maids wear the red shirts, Delana said when she had stifled her giggles.
She admonished Marge for not spending the time to find me better size uniforms. Marge pushed her lips together tighter. Fussing around me like a grandmother instead of a young woman, Delana's attentions warmed me, pulling me toward her. I envisioned us becoming friends. She probably had many acquaintances and suitors who came to bask in her attentions, like cave dwellers drawn to a blazing hearth. I found myself aching to reach out to her. After writing my measurements down, Delana searched through the piles of red, black, and white clothing stacked around the room. Everyone who worked in Ixia wore a uniform. The commander's castle servants and guards wore a variation of black, white, and red color clothes, with vertical diamond shapes either down the sleeves of the shirts or down the sides of the pants. Advisors and higher-ranking officers usually wore all black with small red diamonds stitched on the collars to show rank. The uniform system became mandatory when the commander gained power, so everyone knew at a glance who they were dealing with. Black and red were Commander Ambrose's colors. The territory of Ixia had been separated into 8 military districts, each ruled by a general. The uniforms of the 8 districts were identical to the commander's, except for the color. A housekeeper wearing black with small purple diamond shapes on her apron therefore worked in Military District 3, or MD3.
I think these should fit better.
She handed me some clothes, gesturing to the privacy screen at the far end of the room. While I was changing, I heard Delana say,
"She'll need boots."
Feeling less foolish in my new clothes, I picked up the old uniforms and gave them to Delana.
"These must have belonged to Oskov, the old food taster," Delana said. A sad expression gripped her face for a moment before she shook her head as if to rid herself of an unwanted thought.
All my fantasies of friendship fled me as I realized that being friends with the commander's food taster was a big emotional risk. My stomach hollowed out while Delana's warmth leaked from me, leaving a cold bitterness behind. A sharp stab of loneliness struck me as an unwanted image of May and Kara, who still lived at Brazel's manor, flashed before my eyes. My fingers twitched to fix Kara's crooked braids and to straighten May's skirt. Instead of Kara's silky ginger hair in my hands, I held a stack of clothes. Delana guided me to a chair. Kneeling on the floor, she put socks on my feet and then a pair of boots. The boots were made of soft black leather. They came up over my ankle to mid-calf where the leather folded down. Delana tucked my pant legs into the boots and helped me stand. I hadn't worn shoes in seasons, and I expected them to chafe. But the boots cushioned my feet and fit well. I smiled at Delana, thoughts of May and Kara temporarily banished. These were the finest pair of boots I'd ever worn. She smiled back and said,
"I can always pick the right size boots without having to measure."
Marge harumphed. "You didn't get poor Ran's boots right. He's too smitten with you to complain. Now he limps around the kitchen."
"Don't pay any attention to her," Delana said to me. "Marge, don't you have work to do? Get going or I'll sneak into your room and shorten all your skirts."
Delana shooed us good-naturedly out the door. Marge took me to the servants' dining room and served me small portions of soup and bread. The soup tasted divine. After devouring the food, I asked for more.
"No, too much will make you sick," was all she said.
With reluctance, I left my bowl on the table to follow Marge to my room.
"At sunrise, be ready to work."
Once again, I watched her retreating back. My small room contained a narrow bed with a single stained mattress on a stark metal frame, a plain wooden desk and chair, a chamber pot, an armoire, a lantern, a tiny wood stove, and one window shuttered tight. The gray stone walls were unadorned. I tested the mattress. It barely yielded. A vast improvement over my dungeon cell, yet I found myself somewhat dissatisfied. Nothing in the room suggested softness. With my mind and eyes filled with Valak's metal face and Marge's censure and the harsh cut and colors of the uniforms, I longed for a pillow or blanket. I felt like a lost child looking for something to clutch, something supple that wouldn't end up hurting me. After hanging my extra uniforms in the armoire, I crossed to the window. There was a sill wide enough for me to sit on. The shutters were locked, but the latches were on the inside. Hands shaking, I unlocked and pushed the shutters wide, blinking in the sudden light. Shielding my eyes, I squinted beneath my hand and stared at the scene in front of my window in disbelief. I was on the first floor of the castle. 5 feet below was the ground. Between my room and the stables were the commander's kennels and the exercise yard for the horses. The stable boys and dog trainers wouldn't care if I escaped. I could drop down without any effort and be gone. Tempting, except for the fact that I would be dead in 2 days. Maybe another time, when 2 days of freedom might be worth the price.
I could hope. Chapter 3. Rayad's whip cut into my skin, slashing my flesh with a burning pain.
Move, he ordered.
I dodged ineffectively, hampered by the rope tied to my wrist, which anchored me to a post in the center of the room.
Move faster! Keep moving! Rayad shouted.
The whip snapped again and again. My tattered shirt gave no protection from the stinging leather. A cool, soothing voice entered my skull.
Go away, it whispered. Send your mind to a distant place, a warm, loving place. Let your body go.
The silken voice didn't belong to Rayad or Brazel. A savior, perhaps? An easy way to escape the torment. Tempting, but I held out for another opportunity. Determined, I stayed, focusing on avoiding the lash. When exhaustion claimed me, my body began to vibrate of its own accord. Like an out-of-control hummingbird, I darted around the room, avoiding the whip. I woke in darkness, soaked with sweat, my crumpled uniform twisted tight around my body. The vibration in my dream replaced by a pounding. Before falling asleep, I had wedged a chair under the doorknob to prevent anyone from barging in. The chair rattled with each thud. I'm up, I shouted. The racket stopped. When I opened the door, Marge stood frowning with a lantern. I hastened to change my uniform and joined her in the hallway. I thought you said sunrise. Her disapproving stare seared my lips shut.
It is sunrise.
I followed Marge through the labyrinth of the castle's hidden hallways as the day began to brighten. My room faced west, shielding me from the morning sun. Marge extinguished the lantern just as the scent of sweet cakes filled the air. Inhaling, I asked her, "Breakfast?" A hopeful, almost pleading note crept into my voice, galling me.
"No, Valak will feed you."
The image of breakfast laced with poison did wonders for suppressing my appetite. My stomach tightened as the unwanted memory of Valak's butterfly dust came to mind. By the time we had reached his office, I had convinced myself that I was about to collapse, soon to be vanquished by the poison if I didn't receive the antidote. When I entered the room, Valak was in the process of arranging plates of steaming food. He had cleared off a section of the table. The displaced papers balanced in messy piles. He gestured to a chair. I sat, searching the table for the small vial of antidote. I hope you're... Valak studied my face. I stared back, trying not to flinch under his scrutiny.
It's amazing what a difference a bath and a uniform can make, Valak said, absently chewing on a slice of bacon. I'll have to remember that. It might be useful in the future.
Placing two plates of an egg and ham mixture before me, he said, Let's get started. Feeling dizzy and flushed, I blurted out, I'd rather start with the antidote. Another long pause from Valak caused me to fidget in my seat.
You shouldn't be feeling any symptoms. They won't arrive until later this afternoon.
He shrugged and went to his cabinet. He used a pipette to extract a measure of the white liquid from a large bottle, and then locked the antidote back inside the cabinet. My interest in the location of the key must have been obvious, because Valak used some type of sleight of hand to make the key disappear. Handing me the pipette, he sat down on the opposite side of the table.
Drink up so we can start today's lessons, he said.
I squeezed the contents into my mouth, cringing at the bitter taste. Valak took the pipette from my hands and exchanged it for a blue jar. Take a sniff. The jar contained a white powder resembling sugar but smelling like rosewood. Gesturing to the two plates cooling in front of me, Valak asked me to pick the one sprinkled with the poison. I sniffed at the food like a scent hound nosing for prey. A faint odor of rosewood emanated from the left plate.
Good.
Should you pick up that aroma from any of the commander's food, reject it. The poison is called Tigtis, and a single grain of the powder will kill within the hour.
Valak removed the tainted food. Eat your breakfast. He indicated the other plate. You'll need your strength. I spent the remainder of the day smelling poisons until my head ached and spun. The multitude of names and aromas began to confuse me, so I asked Valak for some paper, quill, and ink. He stilled. I don't know why you continue to surprise me. I should have remembered that General Bruzel educates his orphans. Valak flung a book of papers, a quill, and ink down in front of me. Take them back to your room. We've done enough for today. I silently cursed myself for reminding Valak why I had been the next person to be executed, as I gathered the book and writing implements. Valak's hard, unforgiving expression revealed his thoughts. Taken off the streets, fed and educated by Brazel, I had repaid Brazel's kindness by murdering his only child. I knew Valak would never believe the truth about Brazel and Rayad. General Brazel's orphanage was a topic of ridicule from the other generals. They thought he had gone soft after the takeover of Ixia 15 years ago. This impression suited Brazel. Seen as a kindly old benefactor, Brazel could continue unchallenged in his administration of Military District 5. I hesitated at the entrance of Valak's office, noticing for the first time the three complex locks on the thick wooden door. Absently fingering the locking mechanisms, I lingered in the doorway until Valak asked, "Now what?" "I'm not sure where my room is." Valak spoke as if talking to a slow-witted child. "Ask the first housekeeper or kitchen maid you find. They're always scurrying about this time of day. Tell her you're in the West Servant Wing, ground floor. She'll show you." The kitchen maid I snared into helping me was more talkative than Marge, and I took full advantage of her good nature. She guided me to the laundry room to obtain some linens for my bed. Then I had her show me the way to the baths and the seamstress's work area. Delana's piles of uniforms might come in handy someday. In my room, I opened the shutters to let in the fading light from the setting sun. Sitting down at my desk, I wrote exhaustive notes on what I had learned that day, including a rough map of the servants' corridors. I considered more exploration of the castle, but Valak had been right. I needed my strength. I hoped I would have time to explore later. During the next 2 weeks, the training proceeded in a manner so similar to the first day that I lapsed into a routine, arriving at Valak's every morning to train. After 14 days of sniffing poisons, I found that my sense of smell had heightened. But then Valak announced I was strong enough to begin tasting poisons. "I'll start with the deadliest one," he said. "If you don't die from it, the other poisons wouldn't kill you either. I don't want to waste all my time training you only to see you die in the end." He placed a slender red bottle on his desk. "It's nasty. Affects the body immediately." Valak's eyes lit up as he admired the poison. "It's called Have a Drink, My Love, or My Love for short, because the poison has a history of being used by disheartened wives." He squeezed 2 drops of the poison into a steaming cup. "A larger dose would definitely kill you. With a smaller dose, there is a chance you'll survive, but you'll become delusional, paranoid, and completely disoriented for the next few days." "Valak, why do I have to taste my love if it has immediate results? Isn't that what a food taster is for? I taste the commander's food. I keel over, dead, end of the tale." I tried pacing around the room but kept tripping over stacks of books. Frustrated, I kicked 2 piles into their neighbors, scattering books into a messy heap on the floor. Valak's gaze pierced me, draining the odd feeling of satisfaction I had gotten from kicking the books. "A food taster's job is much more complex than that," Valak explained, pulling his hair back from his face. "Being able to identify which poison taints the commander's food can lead me to the poisoner." Valak handed me the cup. "Even if you only have a split second to shout out my love before passing out, it would narrow down the list of suspects. There are a number of assassins who are partial to my love. The poison is grown in Citia, the southern lands. It was easy to obtain before the takeover. With the closure of the southern border, only a handful of people have enough money to purchase it illegally." Valak went over to the mess on the floor and started restacking the books. His movements were so graceful that I wondered if he had been a dancer.
but his words betrayed to me that his fluid gestures were those of a trained killer. Yelena, your job is very important. That's why I spend so much time training you. A shrewd assassin can watch a taster for several days to discover a pattern. Valak continued his lecture from the floor. For example, the taster might always cut a piece of meat from the left side or never stir the drink. Some poisons sink to the bottom of the cup. If the taster only sips off the top, then the assassin knows exactly where to place the poison to kill his intended victim. He finished picking up the books. The new piles were neater than the rest of the stacks on the floor. It seemed an invitation to Valak to continue straightening the books. He cleared a bigger path through his office. Once you drink the poison, Marge will help you to your room and take care of you. I'll give her your daily dose of butterfly's dust antidote. I stared at the steam drifting from the tea. I picked up the cup, the heat warming my icy hands. When Marge entered the room, it felt as if the executioner had just mounted the dais, reaching for the lever. Should I sit down or lie down? I looked around the room, seeing nothing. My arms started to tingle as I realized I had been holding my breath. I raised the cup in a mock salute and then drained the contents. Sour apples, I said. Valak nodded. I had only enough time to put the cup on the table before my world began to melt. Marge's body undulated toward me. Her large head sprouted flowers from her eye sockets. A moment later, her body filled the room as her head shriveled. I sensed movement. The gray walls grew arms and legs that reached for me, trying to use me in their fight against the floor. Gray spirits rose from under my feet. They dived, poked, and cackled at me. They were freedom. I tried to push the Marge thing away, but it clung and wrapped itself around me, digging through my ears and pounding on my head.
Murderer, it whispered. Sneaky bitch. You probably slit his throat while he slept. Easy way to kill. Did you enjoy yourself as you watched his blood soak the sheets? You're nothing but a rat.
I grabbed at the voice, trying to make it stop, but it turned into two green and black toy soldiers who held me tight.
She'll die from the poison. If not, you can take her, the Marge thing said to the soldiers.
They pushed me into a dark pit. I plunged into blackness. The stench of vomit and excrement greeted me when I regained consciousness. They were the unmistakable odors of the dungeon. Wondering how I had ended up back in my old cell, I sat up. A surge of nausea demanded my attention. I groped around for the slop pot and encountered the metal leg of a bed, which I clutched as dry heaves racked my body. When they stopped, I leaned against the wall, grateful to be on the floor of my room and not back in the dungeon. Beds were a luxury not included with the subterranean accommodations. Summoning the strength to stand, I located and lit my lantern. Dried vomit caked my face. My shirt and pants were soaking wet and smelled foul. The liquid contents of my body had collected in a puddle on the floor.
Marge took good care of me, I thought sarcastically. At least she was practical. If she had dumped me on the bed, I would have ruined the mattress.
I thanked fate that I had survived the poison and that I had awakened in the middle of the night. Unable to endure the feel of my sodden uniform any longer, I made my way to the baths. On my return, voices stopped me before I reached the hallway leading to my room. Extinguishing my lantern in one quick motion, I peeked around the corner. Two soldiers stood in front of my door. The soft light of their lantern reflected the green and black colors of their uniforms. Brazel's colors. Chapter 4.
Should we check if she's dead? Asked one of Brazel's soldiers.
He held the lantern up to my door, his overloaded weapon belt jingling with the motion.
No, that housekeeper checks every morning and gives her a potion. We'll hear about it soon enough. Besides, it stinks in there.
The other soldier waved his hand in front of his face.
Yeah, if the smell don't kill the mood, taking off her vomit-soaked uniform would make any man gag.
Although, the lantern soldier's hand briefly touched the manacles hanging from his belt.
We could drag her down to the baths, clean her up, and have some fun before she dies.
No, someone would see us. If she survives, we'll have plenty of time to peel off her uniform. It'll be just like opening a present, and definitely more entertaining when she's awake.
He leered. They laughed. They continued down the hallway and were soon out of sight. I clung to the wall and wondered if what I had just witnessed had been real. Was I still having paranoid hallucinations? My head felt as if it had soaked too long in a pool of water. Dizziness and nausea rippled through my body. The soldiers were long gone before I worked up the nerve to go back to my room. I pushed the door wide and thrust my lantern in front of me, shining the light into every corner and under the bed. A harsh, acrid odor was the only thing to attack me. Gagging, I unlocked the shutters and threw them open, taking deep breaths of the cool, cleansing air. I looked at the noxious puddle on the floor. The last thing I wanted to do was clean up the mess, but I knew I would never be able to sleep while breathing in that foul smell. After raiding housekeeping supplies and stopping for the occasional bout of nausea, I managed to scrub the floor without fainting. Exhausted, I stretched out on the bed. It felt lumpy. I turned in my blankets, hoping to find a comfortable position. What if Brazel's soldiers came back? Asleep in bed, I would be an easy target. I had cleaned myself up so there was no need to drag me to the baths. The room smelled like disinfectant, and I had forgotten to put the chair under the doorknob. Imagination kicked in, a vivid scene of me manacled to the bed, helpless, while the soldiers stripped me slowly to heighten their anticipation and savor my fear. The walls of my room seemed to thicken and pulse. I bolted out into the hallway, expecting to see Brazel's soldiers lurking around my door. The corridor was dark and deserted. When I tried to re-enter my room, I felt as if someone pressed a pillow against my face. I couldn't get my feet to move past the doorway. My room was a trap. The paranoia effect of my love, or common sense? I wondered. Indecision kept me standing in the hallway until my stomach growled. Guided by my hunger, I searched for food. Hoping to find the kitchen empty, I was dismayed to see a tall man wearing a white uniform with two black diamonds printed on the front of his shirt, mumbling to himself as he lurched around the ovens. His left leg didn't bend. I tried to sneak back out, but he spotted me.
"Are you looking for me?" he asked.
"No," I said. "I was looking for something to eat." I craned my neck back to see his face. He frowned and shifted his weight to his good leg as he studied my uniform. Too thin for a cook, I thought, but he wore the proper clothes and only a cook would be up this early. He was handsome in a subtle way, with light brown eyes and short brown hair. I wondered if this was Delana's Rand that Marge had talked about.
"Help yourself."
He gestured toward two steaming loaves of bread.
"You just won me a week's wages."
"Excuse me," I said while cutting off a large piece of bread. "How could I win you money?"
"You're the new food taster, right?"
I nodded.
"Everyone knows Valak gave you a dose of my love. I took a chance and bet a week's wages that you would live."
He stopped to take three more loaves out of the oven.
"A big risk, since you're the smallest and skinniest food taster we've ever had. Most everyone else had wagered that you wouldn't pull through, including Marge."
The cook rummaged through one of the cabinets.
"Here." He handed me some butter. "I'll make you some sweet cakes."
Grabbing various ingredients from a shelf, he proceeded to mix up a batter. "How many food tasters have there been?" I asked him between bites of buttered bread. Working alone didn't seem to suit him. He seemed glad to have some company. With his hands in constant motion, he said,
5 since Commander Ambrose has been in power. Valak loves his poisons. He poisoned many of the commander's enemies, and he likes to keep in practice. You know, testing the food tasters from time to time to make sure they haven't grown lazy."
The cook's words crawled up my spine. I felt as if my body had liquefied and pooled into a giant mixing bowl.
I was just a puddle of ingredients to be beaten, stirred, and used. When the cook poured the batter onto the hot griddle, my blood sizzled along with the sweet cakes.
Poor Oskov. Valak never liked him, testing him constantly until he couldn't handle the pressure. The official cause of death was suicide, but I think Valak killed him.
Flip. I stared as the cook deftly flicked his wrist, turning the cakes over. My muscles trembled in sync with the sound of frying sweet cakes. Here I was worried about Brazel, when one misstep with Valak and...
Flip, I would be gone.
He probably held a couple of poisons in reserve just in case he decided to replace the taster. Glancing over my shoulder, I imagined Valak coming into the kitchen to poison my breakfast. I couldn't even enjoy talking with a chatty cook without being reminded that tasting potentially poisoned food wasn't the only danger of my new job. The cook handed me a plate loaded with sweet cakes, took three more loaves of bread out of the oven, and refilled his bread pans with dough. Piping hot sweet cakes were such a rare treat that I devoured them despite my unsettled stomach.
Oskov was my friend. He was the commander's best food taster. He used to come into my kitchen every morning after breakfast and help me invent new recipes. I have to keep things interesting, or the commander will start looking for a new cook. Know what I mean?
I nodded, wiping butter off my chin. He thrust out his hand.
My name's Rand.
I shook his hand. Yelena. I stopped at an open window on my way to Valak's office. The rising sun was just cresting the Sol Mountains to the east of the castle. The colors in the sky resembled a ruined painting, as if a small child had spilled water on the canvas. I let my eyes feast on the vibrant display of life as I inhaled the fresh air. Everything was in full bloom, and soon the cool morning breeze would warm to a comfortable level. The hot season was in its infancy. The days of sweltering heat and limp, humid nights were still a few weeks away. I had been training with Valak for a fortnight, and I wondered how long my love had held me unconscious. Tearing myself away from the window, I walked toward Valak's office, arriving at his door just as he was leaving.
Yelena, you made it, Valak smiled. It's been 3 days. I was beginning to worry.
I studied his face. He seemed sincerely glad to see me.
Where's Marge? He asked.
I haven't seen her. Thank fate, I thought.
Then you'll need your antidote, Valak said while moving back to his cabinet.
Once I swallowed the liquid, Valak headed toward the door. When I didn't follow, he gestured to me.
I have to taste the commander's breakfast, he said, setting a quick pace.
I huffed along behind him.
It's time you should meet the commander and watch how food tasting should be done.
We turned into the main hallway of the castle. Valak didn't miss a step, but I stumbled and stifled a gasp. The famous tapestries from the king's era were torn and soiled with black paint. In Brazel's orphanage, we had been taught that each tapestry represented a province of the old kingdom. Hand-quilted with gold threads during the course of many years, the colored silk pictures told a story about the history of each province. Now in rags, they still told a very powerful tale about the commander's rule. The commander's disdain for the opulence, excesses, and injustices of the former ruler and his family was well known throughout Ixia. From monarchy to military, the changes in Ixia were severe. While some citizens embraced the simple but strict rules in the code of behavior, others rebelled by refusing to wear their uniforms, by not requesting permission to travel, and by escaping to the south. Based on the offense, the insurgents' punishment matched exactly what was written in the code. No uniform meant 2 days chained naked in the town square. It didn't matter if the offender had a legitimate reason, the punishment was always the same. Ixia's people discovered that there wasn't going to be any guessing about their punishment. No bribing or good old boy networking either. The commander meant business. Live by the code or face the consequences. I pulled my eyes away from the tapestries in time to see Valak disappear through an arched doorway decorated with lavish stonework. Splintered wooden doors hung crookedly on their hinges, but the intricate carvings of trees and exotic birds were still visible, another victim of the takeover, and another reminder of the commander's intent. I stopped in amazement just past the broken doors. This was the castle's throne room. Inside was a sea of desks occupied by numerous advisors and military officers from every military district in the territory. The room hummed with activity. It was hard to distinguish individuals in the commotion, but I finally spotted Valak's smooth stride as he went through an open door at the back of the room. Finding a path around the maze of desks took some time. When I arrived at the door, I heard a man's voice complaining about cold sweet cakes. Commander Ambrose sat behind a plain wooden desk. His office was stark in comparison to Valak's and lacked personal decorations. The only object in the room that did not have a specific purpose was a hand-sized statue of a black snow cat. The cat's eyes glinted with silver, and bright specks of the metal peppered the beast's powerful back. The commander's black uniform was perfectly tailored and immaculate, indistinguishable from Valak's except that the diamonds stitched on his collar were real. They twinkled in the morning light. The commander's black hair was sprinkled with gray, and cut so short that the strands stood straight up. In Brazil's classroom, we had learned that the commander avoided public appearances and having his portrait painted. The fewer people who knew what he looked like, the less his chances were of being assassinated. Some thought he was paranoid, but I believed that since he had gained power by using assassins and covert warfare, he was merely being realistic. This was not the commander I had envisioned. Burly, bearded, and weighed down with medals and weapons. He was thin, clean-shaven, with delicate features. "Commander, this is Yelena, your new food taster," Valak said, pulling me into the room. The commander's gold, almond-shaped eyes met mine. His gaze had the sharpness of a sword point. It pressed against my throat and fastened me to the floor. I felt myself being drawn out and examined. When he looked over at Valak, I swayed with relief.
"From what Brazel's been hollering about, I expected her to breathe fire," the commander said.
I stiffened on hearing Brazel's name. If Brazel was complaining to the commander, I would be back in line for the noose.
"Brazel's a fool," Valak said. "He wanted the drama of a public hanging for his son's killer. I personally would have taken care of her immediately. It would have been within his rights."
Valak slurped the commander's tea and sniffed the sweet cakes. My chest was tight. I was having trouble drawing in air. Besides, it's clearly written in the code of behavior that the next to be hanged gets the job offer. And Brazel was one of the authors. Cutting a piece of one sweet cake from the center and the other from the side, Valak put both pieces in his mouth, chewing slowly. Here, he handed the plate to the commander.
"Brazel does have a point," the commander said.
He picked up his tea and stared at the contents.
"When does she start? I'm getting tired of cold food."
"A few more days."
"Good," the commander said to Valak, then turned to me. "You arrive with my food and taste quick. I don't want to be looking for you. Understand?"
Feeling lightheaded, I answered, "Yes, sir."
"Valak, I'm losing weight because of you. Lunch is in the war room. Don't be late."
"Yes, sir," Valak said and headed for the door. I followed. We wound our way through the tangle of desks. When Valak stopped to consult with another advisor, I glanced around. A handful of the commander's advisors were women, and I noticed two female captains and one colonel. Their new roles were one of the benefits of the takeover. The commander assigned jobs based on skills and intelligence, not on gender. While the monarchy preferred to see women work as maids, kitchen helpers, and wives, the commander gave them the freedom to choose what they wanted to do. Some women preferred their former occupations, while others jumped at the chance to do something else, and the younger generation had been quick to take advantage of the new opportunities. When we finally reached Valak's office, Marge was dusting around Valak's piles of papers on the table. It looked to me as if she was spending more time reading the papers than straightening them. Didn't Valak notice? I wondered what Marge did for Valak besides cleaning. Marge turned a pleasant face to Valak, but as soon as he walked away, she glared fiercely at me. "Must have lost a lot of money betting against my survival," I thought. I smiled at her.
She managed to control her outraged expression before Valak glanced up at us from his desk.
Yelena, you look exhausted. You make me tired just looking at you. Go rest. Come back off to lunch and we'll continue with your training.
I didn't really feel tired, but rest sounded like an excellent idea. As I moved along the hallway, Valak's comment wormed its way through my mind. My pace slowed, and I dragged my feet toward my room. I was so preoccupied with the physical effort of walking that I bumped right into two of Brazel's guards.
"Looky, Ren, I found our rat," one guard exclaimed, grabbing my wrist.
Alert, I gaped at the green diamonds on the guard's uniform.
"Good for you," Ren said. "Let's show your catch to General Brazel."
"The general isn't fond of live rats, especially this one."
The guard shook me hard. Pain coursed up my arm to my shoulder and neck. In a panic, I searched the hallway for help. It was deserted.
"That's right. He prefers them skinned alive." I'd heard enough. I did what any good rat would do. I bit down on the guard's hand until I tasted blood.
Yelping and cursing in surprise, his grip lessened. I jerked my arm out of his grasp and ran. Chapter 5. I was only a couple of steps away from Brazel's guards when they recovered from their surprise and began to chase me. Being terrified and unburdened of weapons, I had a slight advantage. It wouldn't last. I was already puffing with the effort. The corridors were mysteriously empty as I ran through them. If I did find someone, I wasn't really sure they would or could help me. Like a rat, my only hope of escape was to find a hole to hide in. I ran without a plan, caring only about keeping ahead of the guards. The corridors blurred together until I imagined I was running in place, and it was the walls that were moving. I slowed for a moment to get my bearings. Where was I? The light in the hallway was waning. My pounding steps kicked dust up from the floor. I had headed toward an isolated part of the castle, a perfect place for a quiet murder. Quiet because I wouldn't have enough air in my lungs to scream. I made a quick right turn into a corridor that led off into darkness. Momentarily out of the guard's sight, I pushed against the first door I encountered. Groaning and creaking, it yielded slightly under my weight, and then stuck tight. A gap big enough for my body, but not my head. Hearing the guards turn down the corridor, I threw myself against the door. It moved another inch. I tumbled head first into a dark room and landed on the floor. The guards found the door. I watched in horror as they tried to muscle it open. The gap began to expand. I scanned the room. My eyes adjusted to the gloom. Empty barrels and rotten sacks of grain littered the floor. A pile of rugs was stacked against the far wall below a window. The door surrendered a couple more inches to the guard's efforts before lodging again. I stood and stacked the barrels on top of the rug pile. Scrambling up them, I reached the window, only to discover it was too small for me to fit through. The door cracked ominously. I used my elbow to shatter the window pane. Pulling the ragged glass fragments out of the frame, I tossed them to the floor. Blood ran down my arm. Heedless of the pain, I jumped down, pressed myself against the wall next to the doorway, and fought to stifle the harsh sound of my breathing. With a loud groan, the door stopped mere inches from my face as the guards stumbled into the storeroom.
"Check the window. I'll cover the door," Ren said.
I peeked around the edge. Ren's companion walked to the pile of rugs and barrels, crushing glass beneath his boots. My plan wasn't going to work.
Ren blocked my escape route. The broken window would only delay the inevitable.
"Too small. She's still here," the guard called from above.
My rough breathing had accelerated into fast gasps. I felt lightheaded. The rat trap had sprung. I was immobilized in its metal jaws. My thoughts jumbled into a cloud of images. I clutched at the door, trying not to fall.
A buzzing sound burst uncontrolled from my throat. I was unable to suppress the drone. Trying harder only caused the sound to grow louder. I staggered out from behind the door. With all the noise I made, the guards didn't even glance in my direction. They seemed frozen in place. My lungs strained for air. On the verge of passing out, the buzzing then released me. The sound still rang in the room, but it no longer came from me. The guards continued to be unresponsive. After taking several deep breaths, I bolted from the room. I wasn't going to waste time trying to understand. The buzzing sound followed me as I ran back the way we had come. The loud hum ended as soon as I started seeing other servants hurrying through the hallway. Odd looks were cast my way. I realized I must be quite a sight. I forced myself to stop running as I tried to calm my hammering heart. My throat burned from panting, my uniform was stained, pain throbbed in my elbow, and bright red beads dripped off my fingers. Looking at my hands, I saw deep cuts from handling the glass. I gazed at the blood on the floor. Turning around, I saw a line of crimson drops disappearing down the corridor. I clutched my arms to my chest, but it was too late. I had left a blood trail, and there were Brazel's guards, like trained dogs, following it. They were coming around the corner at the far end of the hall. Undetected so far, I knew any sudden movement would draw their attention. I joined a group of servants, hoping to blend in. Pain pulsated in harmony with my laboring heartbeat. When I reached a turn, I risked a glance over my shoulder. The guards stood at the spot where my blood trail had ended. Ren gestured as he argued with his partner. I slipped around the corner unnoticed, then bumped right into Valak. "Yelena, what happened to you?" Valak grabbed my arm. I winced. He let go. "I fell on some glass. It was weak. I hurried to cover it. I'm on my way to get cleaned up." As I began to walk past Valak, he grasped my shoulder, spinning me around. "You need to see a medic." Okay. I tried once more to get past Valak. "The medic is this way." Valak pulled on my shoulder, forcing me to follow him back down the corridor toward the guards. Foolishly, I hoped they wouldn't see me, but as we walked past, they smiled, falling into step behind us. I glanced at Valak. There was no expression on his face. His grip on my shoulder tightened. Was Valak leading me to some secluded spot where the three of them could kill me? Should I make a break for it? But if Valak had wanted me dead, he had only to withhold the antidote to Butterfly's dust. When the hallway emptied of people, Valak let go of my shoulder and swung around to face the two guards. I stayed close behind him. "Are you lost?" Valak asked the guards. "No, sir," said Ren. A foot taller than Valak, his hands were the size of my head. "Just want to reclaim our prisoner." Ren tried to reach around Valak to grab me. Valak deflected his hand. "Your prisoner?" Valak's voice sliced through the air like steel. The guards looked at each other in disbelief. Valak had no weapons. While the other guard was shorter than Ren, he still outweighed the other two men. Identical cocky smirks touched both guards' faces. I wondered if sneering and glaring were part of their training. Rand the cook would probably bet a month's wages on Brazel's soldiers winning this argument. "Actually, General Brazel's prisoner, sir. Now if you would," Ren gestured for Valak to step aside. "Tell your boss that Valak doesn't appreciate having his new food taster chase through the castle, and that I would like her to be left alone." The guards glanced at each other again. I was beginning to suspect they had only one brain to share between them. Regarding Valak with a more focused expression, they shifted their posture into a fighting stance. "We have been ordered to bring the girl to the general, not messages," Ren said, pulling his sword from his belt. With the sound of ringing metal, the second guard flourished his weapon as well. Ren asked Valak to move aside once more. Faced with two swords, what could Valak do? Run for my life is what I would do, so I shifted my weight to the balls of my feet, preparing to flee. Valak's right hand blurred into motion with two quick snaps of his wrist. It looked as if he had saluted both guards. Before the men could react, He was between them, too close for swords. He crouched low, put his hands on the floor, and spun. Using his legs, Valak windmilled both guards to the ground. I heard a clatter of metal, a whoosh of air from Ren, and a curse from the other before they both lay motionless. Baffled, I watched Valak gracefully move away from his fallen opponents. He counted under his breath. When he reached 10, he bent over each man and removed a tiny dart from each of their necks. It's a dirty way to fight, but I'm late for lunch. Chapter 6. Stepping over the prone forms of the sleeping soldiers, Valak took my injured arm and inspected it.
Not as bad as it looks. You'll live.
We'll see the commander first, then the medic. Valak hurried me through the castle. My arm began to throb. I lagged behind. The thought of facing the commander's stony gaze dragged at my feet. Finding the medic, then sinking into a hot bath, was without a doubt more appealing. We entered a spacious round chamber that served as the commander's war room. Slender, stained-glass windows stretched from the floor to the ceiling and encircled three-quarters of the chamber. The kaleidoscope of colors made me feel as if I were inside a spinning top. Dizzy, I would have stumbled except I caught a glimpse of something that rooted me to the floor. A long wooden table filled the center of the room. Sitting at the head of the table, with two guards standing behind him, was the commander. His thin eyebrows were pinched together in annoyance. A tray of untouched food sat by his side. Also seated around the table were three of the commander's generals. Two of the generals were busy eating their lunch, while the third's fork hovered in midair. I focused on the hand. White knuckles equaled white-hot rage. With reluctance, I met General Brazel's gaze. Brazel lowered his fork, his face taut. His eyes held lightning. I was the target, and like a rabbit caught in the open, I was too frightened to move.
"Valak, you're..." Commander Ambrose began.
"Late," Valak finished for him. "I know. There was a slight altercation," he said. He pulled me closer. Intrigued, the other two generals stopped eating. I flushed, stifling a strong desire to bolt from the room. Having no contact with any high-ranking officers, I recognized the generals only by the colors on their uniforms. My trip to the commander's dungeon was the first time I had been past the borders of MD5. Even during the first 10 years I had lived in Brazel's orphanage, I had only caught brief glimpses of him and his family. Unfortunately, after I had turned 16, the sight of Brazel and his son Rayad became my daily nightmare. I had been flattered by the attention of my benefactor. His gray hair and short beard framed a square-shaped, pleasant face that shouted respectability. Stout and sturdy, he was the ultimate father figure to me. Brazel told me I was the smartest of his adopted children and that he needed my help with some experiments. I readily agreed to participate. The memory of how grateful and naive I had been sickened me. It was 3 years ago. I had been a puppy. A puppy still wagging her tail as the bag's opening was tied shut. 2 years I had suffered. My mind recoiled from the memories. I stared at Brazel in the war room. His lips were pressed tight as his jaw quivered. He fought to contain his hatred. Faint with fatigue, I saw Rayad's ghost appear behind his father. Rayad's slashed throat hung open, and blood dripped down, staining his nightshirt. A distant recollection of a tale about murder victims haunting their killers until their business was settled filtered through my mind. I rubbed my eyes. Did anyone else see the ghost? If so, they hid it well. My gaze slid to Valak. Was he haunted by ghosts? If that old story was to be believed, he would be swamped by them. Worry that I might not be completely rid of Rayad pulsed through me, but not a trace of remorse. The only thing I was sorry for was not having the courage to kill Brazel when I had the chance. Sorry that I was unable to save my sisters and brothers at Brazel's orphanage from turning 16. Sorry that I was unable to warn May and Kara,
and help them run away. The commander's voice brought my attention back to the war room.
Altercation, Valak? He sighed like an indulgent parent. How many dead?
None. I couldn't justify the disposal of soldiers merely following General Brazil's orders to hunt down and kill our new food taster. Besides, they weren't very smart. Seems she was on the verge of giving them the slip when she ran into me. Good thing, though, or I might not have found out about the incident. The commander studied me for a while before turning to Brazil. It was all Brazil needed. Leaping from his chair, he shouted,
"She should be dead. I want her dead. She killed my son."
Valak said, "But the code of behavior..."
"Damn the code. I'm a general. She killed a general's son, and here she is."
Emotion choked off Brazil's voice. His fingers twitched as if he wanted to wrap his hands around my throat that instant. Rayad's ghost floated behind his father, a smirk on his face.
"It's a dishonor to me that she lives," Brazil said. "An insult. Train another prisoner. I want her dead."
Instinctively, I stepped behind Valak. The other generals were nodding their heads in agreement. I was too terrified to look at the commander.
"He has a sound argument," the commander said without a trace of emotion tainting his voice.
"You have never deviated from what's written in the code of behavior," Valak argued. "Start now and you'll begin a trend. Besides, you'll be killing the brightest food taster we've ever had. She's almost trained." He gestured to the tray of cold food beside the commander. I glanced around Valak to see the commander's expression. Thoughtful, he pursed his lips while he considered Valak's argument. I crossed my arms, digging my fingernails deep into my flesh. Brazil, sensing a change of heart, took a step toward the commander.
"She's smart because I educated her. I can't believe you're going to listen to this upstart, conniving, sneaky thief."
Brazil stopped. He had said too much. He had insulted Valak, and even I knew that the commander had a special fondness for Valak.
"Brazil, leave my food taster alone."
My breath hissed with relief. Brazil attempted to argue, but the commander silenced him.
"It's an order. Go ahead and build your new factory. Consider your permit approved."
He dangled a carrot in front of Brazil. Was a new factory worth more than my death? Silence followed as everyone waited for Brazil to comment. He gave me a look full of venom. Rayad's ghost grinned, and I guessed from his cat-that-got-the-rat smile that the permit approval was very important to Brazil. More important than he led on to the commander. The rage and indignation over my missing the noose was genuine, but he could build his factory now and then kill me later. He knew where to find me. Brazil left the room without saying another word. The amused ghost mouthed the words, "See you next time," before following his father. When the other generals started to protest the permit approval, the commander listened to their arguments in silence. Momentarily forgotten, I studied the two generals. Their uniforms were similar to the commander's, except that they wore black jackets with gold buttons. Instead of real diamonds on their collars, each general had 5 embroidered diamonds stitched on their coats over their left breasts. No medals or ribbons decorated their uniforms. The commander's troops wore only what was needed for recognition and for battle. The diamonds on the general sitting close to the commander were blue. He was General Hazal, in charge of Military District 6, just west of Brazil's MD5. General Tesso's diamonds were silver for MD4, which bordered to the north of Brazil's. If a district planned a big project, like building a new factory or clearing land for farming, a permit approved by the commander was required. Smaller projects, like installing a new oven at a bakery or building a house within the district, only needed approval from that district's general. Most generals had a staff to handle the processing of new permit applications. It was apparent from the general's complaints that Brazil's permit was in the initial processing stages. Discussions with the bordering districts had started, but the commander's staff had not yet reviewed and authenticated the factory's plans. Usually, once the staff recommended approval, the commander signed off on the application. The code of behavior only stated that permission must be received prior to building, and if the commander wanted to bypass his own process, he could do so. We had been taught the code of behavior at the orphanage. Anyone wishing the honor of running errands into town had to memorize and recite the code perfectly prior to gaining the privilege. Besides reading and writing, the education I had received from Brazil had also included mathematics and the history of Ixia's takeover by the commander. Since the takeover, education was available to everyone, and not just a privilege for the men of the richer classes. My education, though, took a turn for the worse when I began helping Brazil. Memories threatened to overwhelm me. My hot skin felt tight. I trembled, forcing my mind to the present. The generals had finished their rebuttal of the commander's decision. Valak tasted the commander's cold food and pushed it closer to him.
"Your concerns are noted. My order stands," the commander said.
He turned to Valak.
"Your food taster had better live up to your endorsements. One slip, and you'll be training her replacement prior to your reassignment. You're dismissed."
Valak took my arm and steered me from the chamber. We walked down the hallway until the door of the war room clicked shut. Then Valak stopped. The features on his face had hardened into a porcelain mask.
"Yelena."
"Don't say anything. Don't threaten or bully or intimidate. I've had enough of that from Brazil. I'll make every effort to be the best taster because I'm getting used to the idea of living, and I don't want to give Brazil the satisfaction of seeing me dead." Tired of examining Valak's every facial expression and straining to hear every small nuance in his voice for clues to his mood, I moved away from him. He followed me. When we reached an intersection, Valak's hand grasped my elbow. I heard him utter the word "medic" as he guided me to the left. Without once looking at his face, I let him steer me to the infirmary. As I was led to an empty examining table, I squinted at the medic's all-white uniform. The only collar on the uniform was two small red diamonds stitched on the collar. My mind was so muddled with fatigue that it took me some time to figure out that the short-haired medic was a female. With a grunt, I stretched out on the table. When the woman left to get her supplies, Valak said,
"I'll post some guards outside the door in case Brazil changes his mind."
Before leaving the infirmary, I saw him speak with the medic. She nodded and glanced toward me. The medic returned with a tray full of shiny medical instruments that included a jar of a substance that looked like jelly. She scrubbed my arms with alcohol, making the wounds bleed and sting. I bit my lip to keep from crying out.
"They're all superficial, except this one," the medic said as she pointed to the elbow I had used to break the glass. "This wound needs to be sealed."
"Sealed?" It sounded painful. The medic picked up the pot of jelly.
"Relax. It's a new method for treating deep lacerations. We use this glue to seal the skin. Once the wound heals, the glue is absorbed into the body."
She scooped out a large amount with her fingers and applied it to the cut. I winced at the pain. She pinched my skin together, holding it tight. Tears rolled down my cheeks.
"It was invented by the commander's cook, of all people. There are no side effects, and it tastes great in tea."
"Rand?" I asked, surprised. She nodded. Still holding the skin together, she said,
"You'll need to wear a bandage for a few days and keep the cut dry."
She blew on the glue for a while before releasing her grip. She bandaged my arm.
"Valak wants you to stay here tonight. I'll bring you dinner. You can get some rest."
I thought eating might require too much effort, but when she brought the hot food, I realized I was starving. A strange taste in my tea caused me to lose my appetite in an instant. Someone had poisoned my tea.
Chapter 7.
I waved down the medic. "There is something in my tea," I cried. I began to feel lightheaded. "Call Valak. Maybe he had an antidote." She stared at me with her large brown eyes. Her face was long and thin. Longer hair would soften her features. Her short style merely made her resemble a ferret.
"It's sleeping pills. Valak's orders," she said. I let out a breath, feeling better. The medic gave me an amused look before she left. My appetite ruined, I shoved the food aside. I didn't need sleeping pills to help me give in to the exhaustion that lapped up my remaining strength. When I woke the next morning, there was a blurry white blob standing at the end of my bed. It moved. I blinked and squinted until the image sharpened into the short-haired medic.
Did you have a good night?
Yes, I said. The first night in a long time free of nightmares, although my head felt as if wool had been shoved into it, and a rank taste in my mouth didn't promise for a good morning. The medic checked my bandages, made a noncommittal sound, and told me breakfast would be a while. As I waited, I scanned the infirmary. The rectangular room held 12 beds, 6 on each side, and spaced so that they formed a mirror image. The sheets on the empty beds were pulled tight as bowstrings. Orderly and precise, the room annoyed me. I felt like rumpled bedding, no longer in control of my soul, my body, or my world. Being surrounded by neatness offended me, and I had a sudden desire to jump on the empty beds, knocking them out of line. I was farthest from the door. Two empty beds lay between the three other patients and me on my side of the room. They were sleeping. I had no one to talk to. The stone walls were bare. Hell, my prison cell had more interesting decorations. At least it smelled better in here. I took a deep breath. The clean, sharp smell of alcohol mixed with disinfectant filled my nose, so different from the dungeon's fetid air. Much better. Or was it? There was another scent intermixed with the medical aroma. Another whiff, and I realized that the sour odor of old fear emanated from me. I shouldn't have survived yesterday. Brazel's guards had me cornered. There was no escape. Yet I had been saved by a strange buzzing noise that had erupted from my throat like an unruly, uncontrollable offspring. A primal survival instinct that had echoed in my nightmares. I avoided thoughts about that buzz because it was an old acquaintance of mine, but the memories kept invading my mind. Examining the past 3 years, I forced myself to concentrate on when and where the buzzing had erupted, and to ignore the emotions. The first couple of months of Brazel's experiments had merely tested my reflexes. How fast I could dodge a ball, or duck a swinging stick. Harmless enough until the ball had turned into a knife, and the stick into a sword. My heart began to pound. With sweaty palms, I fingered a scar on my neck. No emotion, I told myself sternly, flicking my hands as if I could push away the fear. Pretend you're the medic, I thought, asking questions to gain information. I imagined myself dressed in white, calmly sitting next to a fevered patient while she babbled. What came next? I asked the patient. Strength and endurance tests, she answered. Simple tasks of lifting weights had turned into holding heavy stones above her head for minutes, then hours. If she dropped the stone before the time was up, she was whipped. She was ordered to clutch chains dangling from the ceiling, holding her weight inches above the floor, until Brazel or Rayad gave permission to let go. When was the first time you heard the buzzing? I prompted the patient. She had released the chains too early, too many times, and Rayad became furious. So he forced her outside a window 6 floors above the ground, and let her hold on to the ledge with her hands.
Let's try it again, Rayad said. Now that we've raised the stakes, maybe you'll last for the whole hour.
The patient stopped speaking. Go on, tell me what happened, I prodded. Her arms had been weak from spending most of the day hanging from the chains. Her fingers were slick with sweat. Her muscles trembled with fatigue. She panicked. When her hand slipped off the ledge, she howled like a newborn. The howl mutated and transformed into a substance. It expanded out, enveloped, and caressed her skin on all sides. She felt as if she was nestled in a warm pool of water. Next thing she remembered, she was sitting on the ground. She glanced up at the window. Rayad watched her with his face flushed, his perfect blonde hair an unusual mess. Delighted, he blew her a kiss. The only way she could have survived the fall was by magic. No, absolutely not, she insisted. It had to have been some strange wind currents or landing the right way, not magic. Magic, a forbidden word in Ixia since Commander Ambrose came to power. Magicians had been treated like disease-riddled mosquitoes. They were hunted, trapped, and exterminated. Any hint or suggestion that someone had magic was a death sentence. The only chance to live was to escape to Citia.